From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Jennifer Ludden. U.S. officials say American troops still face resistance from insurgents in the Iraqi city of Fallujah. By the end of last month, it seemed the Marines had flushed out the rebels, but in the last 10 days, they've come up against an estimated 1 to 200 fighters still inside the city. It's believed some holdouts stayed in a network of underground tunnels. NPR's Mike Schuster is with the 1st Marine Expeditionary Force at Camp Fallujah.
The strategy is to sweep through the town again, apparently through almost all the buildings and homes again, and this has been going on for the last week or 10 days, to flush out these insurgents, and it means going house to house. The Marines did it once right after the battle, and it looks like they have to do it again.
Fallujah's civilian population has still not returned home. The city remains without electricity or water, and many buildings were flattened. U.S. forces in Fallujah and throughout Iraq rely heavily on interpreters to help them navigate Iraqi society. In the last year, insurgents have killed dozens of interpreters working for the U.S. As a result, American forces are finding it harder to recruit them. The language barrier has become one of the biggest problems Americans face in forging bonds with the Iraqi population and in gathering intelligence. Those Iraqis who are willing to act as interpreters usually prefer to remain out of the limelight. Several weeks ago, NPR's Philip Reeves was embedded with U.S. forces near Mosul. He found one interpreter willing to provide an unusually candid insight into the job.
In Hammam al-Alil, south of Mosul, a U.S. military patrol is going from school to school to find out if they're functioning. The Sunni town's considered an insurgent stronghold. To communicate, the American soldiers from Charlie Company 15 depend on their interpreter, a Christian who was born in Iraq but emigrated to Canada.
Do you guys really need anything? Paper, pencils, writing?
He's asked NPR to withhold his true name, so let's call him John. He has one of the most dangerous jobs in Iraq. When he talks to Iraqis, he can feel how much they hate him.
You can tell by the look of their eyes while I'm translating something to an American soldier or to a commander or any officer. The other person right in front of me is just looking at me just like he wants to chop me right up and tears my heart out because and their belief in their eyes, I'm doing a bad thing.
John believes the insurgents are even more eager to kill him than they are to kill American soldiers.
I'm the one who they want. I'm very important for them to chop my head, put on that silver platter, you know, because that's a message for anybody like me or anybody who helps the United States troops.
As he shoos away curious Iraqi children on the streets, John's constantly on guard. His biggest fear is falling into the insurgents' hands. He's already planned what to do.
Just pray my last prayer and shoot myself before they get me. You know, I don't want mom and dad and my wife and my whole rest of the family watching me on TV while they're having fun doing it. Just like I said, I'm going to save my last bullet for myself.
One of John's chief concerns is the psychological pressure that his job places on his family. This emerges when he speaks by telephone to his wife back home.
Sometimes I buy that $35 card. It's like 50 minutes in it. 30 minutes, I don't understand a word my wife's saying because she just cried and everything. And I explained to her, just wait, be patient, it's going to be all right. She says, no, it's not all right, just leave. Because the thing is, I'm doing this, they got to listen, they got to understand what I'm doing it for.
What is he doing it for, though? John says at first it was for the money, but he's changed that view. He offers several explanations, his Christian faith and his desire for change in Iraq. He also expresses strong loyalty to his colleagues in the U.S. Army, with whom he works shoulder to shoulder on the streets. There are times, though, when he feels very alone.
It's very hard. It's very hard, you know. Sometimes I think if we get attacked, ambushed or something, I'm going to be alone out there. And they did that to me one time in Fallujah. I was left alone in downtown Fallujah for about 15 minutes. It was 4 o'clock in the morning, 4:30 in the morning. We were patrolling over there, and suddenly they left me in one building. When I went out there and I found out there's nobody there, I was just in chaos.
John believes the insurgency could take years to subdue, and even then some Iraqis will still hate the U.S. forever.
This is like an invasion, and it's not easy. Because you invade, first of all, not their country. You invade, first of all, their religion. And that's very hard to recover out of that thing.
And he says progress will be slow so long as the U.S. fails to deliver on its promise to Iraqis of stability and reconstruction.
At the moment, we can't do these promises. That's why they hate us. Just like a little kid, you told them, I'm going to give you chocolate bar or an ice cream, and you tell him, oh, okay, tomorrow. And tomorrow comes in, and you're going to tell him tomorrow. And this guy is just, he started hating you now. He's going to call you a liar because looks like you broke your promise.
There's one promise that'll likely not be broken, though. That's the promise John made to himself and his family, that he'll complete his year with the U.S. forces and then get out.
I just want to go back. I got another 10 months left. That 10 months when it's going to be finished, I'm going to be the happiest man alive to go and see my family again and live my life in Canada.
Philip Reeves, NPR News.